portal news, comings and goings, who's hot, who's getting recruits, and where legally is the portal headed, plus a Krispy Kreme thief.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
He's a recruiter. There ain't any question. Like, you get fired up. Start believing Syracuse is going to win the national title if you watch his press conference.
Russ Dellinger.
Oh, and coaches have to hate this, right? You hear the, oh, this transfer portal, this immediate eligibility, this NIL, it's all making it easier for players to quit.
And SI's Pat Forty.
License the names, license the logos and all that stuff, and just make it Crimson Tide Incorporated. And let them play in Bryant-Denny and rent the facilities and stuff. But seriously, we are so far afield here from anything that's remotely academically related. Like, what are we doing?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Portal time. Signing day this week. Getting ready for Flipmas. We got it all happening. Retool your roster. Hope springs eternal. Good times going on out there. It is active. I'd call it wild. I like wild. Most people do, but I know coaches don't because the Wild West scares them. It's the Wild West out there, and they're the terrified like saloon owner hiding behind me.
The Wild West was scary, Dan.
The swinging doors.
I wouldn't want to be in the Wild West. Yeah. People shooting people in the street.
That's us. We're College Football Inquirer riding down that main street. Horses just loving it all. Yeah. Poker games out of control.
Horses running amok. That's bullets right. Illegal flying. Gambling yeah. everywhere.
Hell yeah. Drinking in a saloon. Go upstairs.
I wonder, back in the 1870s in like Cheyenne, Wyoming, if that was like an everyday occurrence or was it like once every 6 months, but in, Hollywood got in control, it was every day.
I like Westerns. I like the Wild West. Anyway, we've got the portal is coming into focus. There's still a lot out there, but starting to come into focus. I've got the Rivals.com portal rankings. I love this.
I don't think 247. Everybody now, it's a whole new side industry of their stuff.
Yeah, everybody loves a good ranking. Anything for a ranking.
They adapt. The problem is, they're going by old high school rankings.
Yeah, right.
But what if the guy wasn't that good? So he had a 4-star, but he really wasn't good. And then, what are you doing with these, these dudes are coming out of, Ivy League and stuff. My favorite guy in the portal so far is Louisville signed this guy named Thor Griffith from Harvard. Defensive lineman. He was a really good hockey player as a kid. And then he got too big, so he couldn't play hockey anymore. Then he went to Harvard, became this Ivy League defensive line, just terrorizing people. His name's Thor.
Thor.
This kid turns into a player.
Wow.
They're going to love him in Louisville, Pat. You will be the second. Right? Most popular person in Louisville. Thor will beat you.
Yeah, he will beat me.
Thor.
Interesting demographic switch for him, student body wise, from Harvard to Louisville.
I assume he's a grad transfer. He's finished his 4 years, so I'm assuming he's finishing his Harvard degree and then going to. No offense to UL, but that would be one of the rare Harvard to Louisville undergrad transfers. Yeah. Thor. I mean, that's what you like. That's what but how do you rank him?
No idea.
How do you rank him? I don't know. But anyway, we have rankings. So we're just going to agree that they're great. Louisville's number 2. We can talk about that. 12 guys.
Yeah.
Wow.
Obviously, they got Thor. Corey Brooks is coming in from Alabama, all that. But I guess this and then I guess the other one we could talk over in the same vein is Ole Miss. But Louisville had a really nice season. It was a good season for them. And I feel like this is going to be interesting. Is the portal capable of taking these teams like Louisville, Ole Miss, which has a tremendous portal class, and went defense heavy? They just got Juice Wells from South Carolina. That's offense. But Walter Nolan from A&M may still go there. Like, filling those gaps, and it's the – is the portal what – you know, ideally, we'll see. Can it take these teams that are 9-10-win teams that are going to struggle to get over that hump, aren't going to win those recruiting battles head-to-head with the elite? Is this going to pop them over, especially as this playoff gets bigger, and all of a sudden you look at Ole Miss and you go, damn, I don't know. Like, this roster might be – it's going to be as close to Alabama as it's ever been. You know, Louisville might have a roster that can compete with anybody, and certainly when you get in that playoff. I don't know. Your thoughts, Pat?
Dan, are you suggesting there's parity coming? Are you suggesting
maybe
parity?
I don't know. This is the theory. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I am. I don't know. Ole Miss looks good next year.
Yeah, they do. They do, and you know what? They did. They went and got defense because Lord knows they need it. That was the clear shortcoming, and actually has been for a lot of what Lane Kiffin's teams, but this one for sure. So, no, I mean, like, yeah, this is the best way to level the playing field in a hurry, as opposed to signing six offensive linemen and waiting 3 years for them to get big enough and strong enough and cohesive enough to all of a sudden make that better, and signing three or four defensive linemen and waiting for them to get big enough. You know, if you go out and get ready-made guys, then that can change your dynamic, definitely. And, like, Louisville used the portal last year to go from 7 wins to 10, right? I mean, a bunch of their key players, their quarterback, their top wide receiver, who just is opting out of the Holiday Bowl, so keep that one in mind, and several offensive linemen, et cetera. So there's no doubt that if you're in that – I mean, ideally, I'm sure you would like to have a mix, right? You're able to sign a productive high school class, but go out and address specific areas that can take you from third team, best team, fourth best team in your league to maybe the best team. So that's kind of the dynamic that can be in play here if you're working the portal right.
Yeah, you know, portal is kind of done what we talked about last podcast about what NIL has done, and it is a little bit of parity in college athletics by spreading out the talent, and I think both of these things together, coaches will probably say, you know, right, created this free agency and this Wild West, as Dan mentioned, but it has spread out the talent, and it's specifically, as we discussed on the last week's pod, the second rung of college football programs that have very wealthy donors in a base that wants to get to championship level and have the resources to do it, but either hadn't been there in a while or is just maybe never has been there, and this is giving everyone an outlet to do that. You know, Ole Miss is. Collective is run by Walker Jones, Ole Miss guy who, former agent, former Under Armour, I don't know what you'd call him, executive or salesman or whatever at Under Armour for years after he was at an agency, and they've done a really good job of pulling money, you know, from donors, and Lane Kiffin's been right there pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I remember when maybe a year and a half ago, an Ole Miss's collective situation was kind of a mess, like many of them, where it was like, I think they had like three different collectives going on at the same time, pulling at each other. And Lane Kiffin really kind of put the thumb to everybody to get this thing right. And they conglomerated it together and hired Walker Jones. And it's been interesting to watch since that's happened, right? What Ole Miss has brought in through the portal, it's not coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss got the 19th rated recruiting class, you know, 10-4 stars. Like, they're doing pretty well, but that's generally where they are, except when Hugh was there telling people to email the compliance office, which they did.
They did
quite a bit. I remember old coworker Kyle Veazey, who covered Ole Miss at the time, did a public records request for all of the emails, I think, that came in.
one of the worst ideas. You're saying we cheated. If you have any information, email our compliance department. And Tom Mars got involved. It was bad. It was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hugh had a couple notably bad ideas.
That wasn't his best idea. That wasn't his best idea. Still got bad treatment in the blind side, but that was as bad. You know, that doesn't make up for this disaster. It kind of made him look like the bumbling fool from the blind side. Please email our compliance. Do not slander our kids, right? That was it. And their families dying to go play for Ole Miss. No, I just think, like, I don't know. Like, you look at Ole Miss, and they've got a lot of – they're filling all those gaps. Michigan did this. How does Michigan go from 10-2 to 13-0? Well, part of it is they're filling gaps on their line and bringing this guy in and this defensive back. And, they can pursue this person. So, Ole Miss and Louisville, to me, are two big ones to watch next year. And they're not done. And both are just enthusiastic about it. I mean, Lane says it. Portal King, he calls himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Portal, right? And he recently tweeted out a graphic. Grand Theft Portal. Him sitting in a car with a woman he's in a tank top, you know, flexing the guns. Grand Theft Portal. Yeah.
Perfect. Then there's the guy that lives in the portal, Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Got 15 so far coming in, an entirely new offensive line. Mm-hmm. Five or six O linemen are coming. Plus, he's got, five star recruit as an offensive lineman. They're filling gaps. Only 8 Colorado players left. I think we made note that there was a lot of hype about everybody leaving. That wasn't true.
Right.
Media got very fired up that everyone was leaving. We're in the let's bury Deion stage of things.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, we keep going through these stages with Deion, these cycles where it was like, oh, he's hired. Oh, this is incredible. Then, oh, wait a minute. He's running everyone off. This is bad. Then, whoa, wait, the product's pretty good. Oh, wait, the product's not very good. And then he's like, yeah, he was a fraud all along. Never any good. Now we're back to, oh, he's getting players.
Yeah. So, getting QBs for the future. We'll see. We'll see. He needs to win 6 or more games next year, but that team should be better. The two trenches are going to be better, alone. So Colorado should be better. I don't know. They're not done either. He'll do whatever he needs to do. But yeah, we're on the. There'll be the redemption. We'll get another redemption cycle on Deion. It's never as bad or as good as it seems, Deion.
Right. But it's always extreme.
I thought he'd actually do better, to be honest with you, but we'll see. He's also famous the last few years on signing day, flipping someone who no one saw coming.
Right.
So it's probably
2 years in a row he's gotten DBs.
He's gotten DB top 5 recruits nationally. So who knows what happens in the between now and signing day on Wednesday. The other big one, and that we talked about this because we thought he might go to Nebraska, and he didn't. Now it looks like Dylan Raiola is going to go to Nebraska, so maybe that's why. Kyle McCord, Ohio State starting quarterback, 11-1 team, is headed to Syracuse. Not Nebraska. He's headed to Syracuse, which on face is a stunner in a way because Syracuse is rarely discussed with anything exciting when it comes to football. So is this the biggest thing? Remember, they started 6-0 that one year and then we ended up 6-6, right?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is more exciting than a Pinstripe Bowl invite. Kyle McCord, they have a new coach, Fran Brown. And he's 41. He's from Camden, New Jersey. He's coached around, just showed up. He was defensive back coach at Georgia. I watched his press conference. This guy he's a recruiter. There ain't any question. Like, you get fired up. You start believing Syracuse is going to win the national title if you watch his press conference. Man can talk. I was excited. I was ready to donate to the collective. He's got Elijah Robinson, the A&M interim coach, to come in. They flipped like four recruits in the first week he got there. They had a big recruiting event in the Carrier Dome that they brought in like a rare edition Ferrari, which isn't that unusual. But then they had a hibachi stand.
Now we're talking.
They had a cook. They had a hibachi chef cooking hibachi for everyone. I think that might have put it over. I have not heard of the hibachi.
No.
But who doesn't like hibachi cooking?
No, right. That's an escalation there. That's a good move.
I've heard it all. Barbecues and I different. You got a hibachi chef? I'm thinking. Taking
soy
a long
sauce
look.
And butter all day.
Oh, my God. And you're like making that little tower of onions.
Oh, yeah. There's a little choo-choo train.
Choo-choo.
Yeah.
Got
so
it.
Good.
You know, he was so a good guy. He was a good hibachi. I mean, you got to bring in a power five elite. We have elite hibachi. I don't know. It's working. Is this quote? I'm going to recruit a different athlete. I'm going to recruit depth. I'm going to recruit a difference makers. I'm really not afraid of no coach in the country. We're going head to head with whoever. We're ready to compete. We're ready to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the new Boeheim. Except positive, the positivity.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Anyway, he's got Kyle McCord. That's an upgrade. They're going to have a top 50 recruiting class. I saw this on Ari Wasserman's thing for the first time since 2007.
Woo.
I mean, we're not talking a whole lot of, you know, the bar is low, but still.
Yeah.
Pat, Fran Brown.
Yeah. Hello, Fran. Welcome. Welcome. Some new energy up there. And that's, he's gotten people's attention for sure. And now he's got a quarterback. To think that Syracuse would land a guy that was just 11-1 as the starter at Ohio State is pretty wild. I mean, I would have thought it would have been a great get for Nebraska. For Syracuse, it's like, holy moly, they just split open the roof of the dome and the savior came down. Now, that might be overstating it because he's not going to be throwing to Marvin Harrison Jr. next year. But I still think that's a great get for Syracuse and put him in the right offense, get a couple playmakers for him, and you could get off to a fast start there if you're Fran Brown. Like it.
Yeah, you know, Kyle McCord took, I think, a fair amount of criticism at Ohio State, and we're gonna really see how good he is, right? Without, like Pat said, without Marvin Harrison Jr. at a program like Syracuse, where you're not surrounded by the best players at pretty much every position. So we'll see how good he is after this run. By the way, can I go back to Thor for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Did you guys
we can
see...
talk Thor. I will talk Thor anytime you want to talk about Thor.
I want to talk about
this guy's my favorite player.
Wait, a Thor-like character. Have you guys seen this viral photo of this Texas high school player, Byron Washington of DeSoto, Texas? 6'8", 380. And he played in the state title game in Texas or the playoff game. And there's this viral photo of him going up against somebody who looks fairly shrimpy, but who is like 6'3", like 200. Yeah. But this guy's 6'8", 380, Byron Washington, the Athletic. Ari Wasserman, actually, of the Athletic, this year.
Two Ari name drops, one pot.
Yeah, there you go. Did a story on... A story on him that I highly recommend. He grew 6 inches in a month.
Yeah,
this kid, and had to have rods inserted into his legs so his growth plates wouldn't collapse. It's crazy. So speaking of Thors, you know,
I thought we were talking about Thor more, but okay, we'll talk. Now where's he going? He's younger though, still, right?
He's younger. Yeah. He's 25 class maybe.
I think class of 25. He's gotten some, you know, some offers already, of course, in the state of Texas, according to Ari's story. But it reminded me, remember that Jonathan Ogden picture from when he was in high school?
Yeah.
Of him like pulling out, leading some running back. And it's like, oh my God, these poor children that have to compete against that. Now, Jonathan Ogden, of course, became an all-time NFL great. We'll see. This guy might just be large, but still fascinating to see somebody 6'8", 380. Doing anything.
I remember seeing a picture of Sean Bradley, the basketball player, who was like 7'6".
Yeah.
Playing basketball in high school in Utah against some Kid's probably like 6'2". Like, I don't know, what's just your basic center at like a normal at normal
that was
high
me.
School?
I was a 6'2" high school center.
You were the center, yeah.
Wanted to, yeah.
The it was an absurd picture. This poor kid is like, just muscle him. Like, what am I going to do with this guy?
Stick your hands straight up and they come up to about his chest.
Great. Someone's taking a picture for Sports Illustrated. Everyone around the country. She's like USA Today or some story. Everyone's laughing at me.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what was I supposed to do? Who else is guarding this guy?
Yeah. I'm a normal sized human.
I'm a big guy. I'm like, I'm 6'2", man. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah. That picture was great. But will he go to Harvard like my guy, Thor? Was he an elite hockey player in New Hampshire? We'll see.
What's Thor's measurables? Do we have his measurables? What's his size?
Thor? Hold on. I'll look it up.
It'd be great if he's like 6'8", 290 or something.
He's turned out to be a player. Like Harvard didn't think he was good enough when he was trying to get recruited by them. I'm sure everyone tries to get recruited. Thor is 6'2", 3. He's 6'2", 320.
Whoa. Okay.
Two-time All Ivy League.
Yeah.
He got a bunch of offers, man. Yeah. UCLA, yeah, everyone wanted Thor. Anyway, he's heading to Louisville. If he, we'll see. The kid may be, you know, who knows? May not be any good at all. But
yeah, but his name's Thor.
His name's Thor, and I'm going for it. He's from Harvard. It's just funny.
Yeah.
So, Kyle McCord, I mean, remains this interesting bit, and I think we're seeing it from everybody. But like these QBs will pull the trigger. You want quick release on your quarterback? Well, maybe not. These guys will go. They ain't afraid of the portal. No scared quarterbacks. And they're all enter the portal if they think they're not going to be the guy. I mean, for Kyle McCord, at the end of the day, to leave Ohio State to go to Syracuse, to leave Ohio State when there's still not an identifiable replacement and go to Syracuse just because he may have lost. I don't know. I don't know what happened. Did he lose the... Just
wasn't promised the job sort of thing,
wasn't promised the job, but like I beat Devin Brown last time. Am I going to get beat up by Aaron Norland, the freshman? I don't know. Like who... Yeah, they could go to the portal, but who? Like Malik Murphy? I thought, well, maybe that's an Ohio State guy. They don't seem interested in him. Like they're just going to... They're smart. They're like, I got to start. I got to play. So they're like, I don't care. I'll go to Syracuse. But to have, I don't even know what to make. I don't quite know how to process Ohio State losing their quarterback to Syracuse. Like, yes, he wasn't a priority, but he's still good. Yeah. Like Ohio State is better with Kyle McCord than without him, even if he's competing for the job. But that ain't going to happen. You hear rumors of Will Howard, the Kansas State QB, going to Southern California, USC. And their five-star freshman, Malachi Nelson, who's a big-time, obviously big-time recruit last year, boom, portal, I'm out. You got to handle your QBs real carefully.
It's almost impossible to build depth, which, again, still, I don't know how Lane Kiffin got three starting-level QBs at
Grand Theft Ole Miss
last year.
Yeah. Grand Theft Portal, that's right.
He's Lane.
Boom, boom.
I mean, Malachi Nelson, again, I don't know how he played this year. I don't even know how you rate him in the portal.
Yeah, because he was super highly rated, but then he didn't play. I mean, he threw three passes or something this year.
Yeah.
You got to just go back off of his high school ranking, right? Isn't that what they're doing, basically?
Yeah, that is. But is that accurate?
Yeah.
But wouldn't you have said...
Was it ever accurate? Mm,
yeah. If he's not going to play,
You know, take this year. You're going to start this year, but then you're going to be our guy. Well, now, obviously, they didn't promise him the job or he doesn't leave, presumably. But here he is. So nobody wants to fight for a job. They want a job. And that means, I don't know. I just think coaches have to handle QBs very, very carefully.
Oh, and coaches have to hate this, right? You hear the, this transfer portal, this immediate eligibility, this NIL, it's all making it easier for players to quit. You hear it a lot over and over. Quitters, not sticking around. And you hear examples of the quarterbacks in the past who, you know, like the Tom Brady's or whatever, that stuck around and did the work and then it paid off. But again, as we talked about on the pod before, let's look at the Heisman Trophy finalists, and three of the four did the same. Did they left? You know, so it can work both ways. But sure, there are going to be probably some poor outcomes to some of this quarterback movement for some of these kids. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating dynamic, and there's I'm sure there's no just single stock correct answer for how to do it. Like the Heisman guys all were in one place for like 3 years and did stick it out, but of course they also got immediate playing time. You know, they all played early at their respective schools, and then things started to go south, and then they left. I've always said in my life experience, and I told this to my kids, and I think it's true for them too, the second year you do anything, you're going to be so much better at it than the first year. The first year may suck. Stick it out. Try the second year. But it's just this market is so different, so volatile, and you'd like to say, well, you know what, Malachi, go through spring practice, and maybe you're better than Will Howard. But if you're not at the end of spring practice, what are your choices? Does everybody already have a quarterback? So, I mean, it's tough. It's tough for coaches. It's tough for players, I think, to figure out the best way to handle these things.
This isn't quite the same, but I look at the example, the patron saint of this is Joe Burrow.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Joe Burrow tried to compete at Ohio State.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Urban moved on from him. And went with Dwayne Haskins. He didn't have a spot, and you could stay and keep fighting. You know, it could be Tom Brady, and you don't start to your fourth year on campus. But Joe Burrow says, forget it, I'm leaving. And he's become, you know, I don't think he and his $250 million contract is too, and his Heisman Trophy and national championship. So sometimes you just have to believe in yourself.
Yep.
And so you go, look, it worked for Joe Burrow. I don't know, but I just think quarterbacks always commit early in classes. Like the juniors will commit because they like to stack up and they find their spot. Spots get taken early. Coaches are always grabbing QBs. We'll see it starting in January. I think Bryce Underwood's going to, the number one quarterback is going to commit like January 6th. He's in the class of 25, right?
Yeah.
He's going to, the QBs will stack out early. So that's kind of what they do. Anyway, the coaches like it then, but these guys are not afraid to move and they want to play. They want to develop, and developing is being on the field and going. So it's interesting. Malachi Nelson leaving USC. Like, you know, I also think there's like something about mini momentums in programs. We just talk about Ole Miss kind of popping. All of a sudden, it's like, I don't know if USC is doing that.
Mm. Right, right. Yeah.
Or even Ohio State. I don't know.
Right.
I'm sure that's going to keep somebody, but you don't see a lot of guys leaving schools that have a little bit of momentum. Doesn't have to be big momentum, just a little, just to keep a guy to stay or bring a guy in, that little balance.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough turbulence at those two spots where coming into 2023, we're like, oh, I mean, you never doubted the rock steadiness of Ohio State, and USC looked like they were poised for, you know, a second great season under Lincoln Riley, and things have gone the other way. And so you do wonder, like, what's the quote-unquote culture, to use coach's favorite words? What's the vibe there right now? Is there an issue, or is it just, this is the way it is, and anytime you hit a minor bump, it looks like a bigger one if people start leaving.
One thing with this portal, like, you know, signing day obviously is right around the corner here, early signing day, and we all remember the days of the original signing day, you know, at the high school, the big ceremonies and the hat stuff at the high school and all that stuff. Man, it's like high school, like, the shift from the normal signing day period in February to early signing period changed a lot of the attention, as we've discussed for a while now, on all that. And now you got, on top of that, you got these huge portal transfers that, again, have further overshadowed like the high school signing day. And it's impacted, obviously, high school athletes as well. Everybody's kind of like dropping a rung, you know. Just talking to a few coaches this fall, like if these high school coaches, if they had a guy who was going to go to the maybe second rung of college football programs, Now he might drop down a level or two because of the activity in the portal. So in general, it's kind of sad to see like the high school recruiting impacted and also like overshadowed as well from an attention standpoint.
Yeah, and that's why they got to move this high school signing day. They need to move it to February. A, for the betterment of the players, the betterment of the coaches, the betterment of the schools, and the betterment of the sport. You can create another day to promote your sport.
Well, there's an argument, Dan, they should move it the other way, right? We talked about that because you get, whether it's June or whether it's July or August or September or whenever, then you get ahead of the portal. So you lock in, these high school kids can get locked in and sign. You don't get trapped in all this portal activity. And you could feel your class more maybe with high school kids, is one thought.
Yeah.
Coaches talking to you about that. I've heard the movement early. I don't like that idea. Go ahead, Pat.
I don't either. No, I don't like that. For a couple reasons. Couple reasons there. And the other thing is, look, I would bet the college coaches would like it because then they've got their guys signed to letters, but then they can still recruit over them in the portal because and the players are stuck. The other part of it too, I think that the younger kids are when they're making momentous decisions, the better chance they're going to make bad decisions. And if you accelerate this to an August signing period, that's a few months. A few months at that age means a lot, and you're having kids take visits earlier and make decisions earlier with less information and less idea of what it's even like to go to college. So I would not be in favor of it personally.
Well, and could that also lead to, we've talked about this before, I know, in the pod, high school players sitting out their senior season of high school.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Right.
You have that. I think the number of coaches that change jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right,
so then you're
going
to have a waiver on your NIL,
mm-hmm.
your national letter of intent. Like, what are you signing with? What if the team stinks? Like, I think later for high school, I get the coaches are making that movement because they just want control.
Sure.
Coaches are control freaks, but it doesn't necessarily help. And then the national letter of intent is a one-sided document. It doesn't mean anything. You also don't know who's going to get into your school.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, players aren't signing them these days. You don't have to sign them.
You don't ever have to sign them. I would never sign them. They're bad.
Yeah, there's some players that aren't, especially in the NIL era. Players, not signing them, or agents telling them not to sign them.
Right.
Yeah.
Sign with the collective instead.
Sign with the collective. Let's see who's the hot. I would sign late. I would move it late. You see where you're at. There's more time to, and then that's just what I would do. The more information you have right now, it's not serving anyone. I mean, if you're sitting there trying to figure out your transfer, let's take a school like Michigan. Do you know that Jim Harbaugh is going to be the coach next year?
No.
Like, they're in the playoff. Their portal is going to be not very active early because kids want to play on the national, like, you got to be really disenchanted to leave a playoff team. Their kids do it. We've seen it. But like Malik Murphy, it's like an unfair thing. I don't know how to handle the portal, but that stinks. Like, the kid should be he could be useful in the playoff.
Sure.
He might play. He's one injury from playing.
Exactly.
But he's kind of got to go. I could wait, but you can understand, like, it's just a bad calendar.
Right.
There's no free agency in the middle of the NFL season.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you just play it out and then you go, okay, we're going to take a little time. It's just, it's not a great setup. All right, Ross, they had, you were listening to the court case on the last.
Yeah. While we were potting the other day. Yeah. Whenever that was, Tuesday.
And
that was podcast excellence.
That was fun. Yeah.
The NCAA's well-meaning but ill-advised waiver policy for immediate eligibility of transfers, which started with one. First, everybody had to sit out a year. And they should have held the line there, but they didn't. So then they started allowing waivers so you could be immediately eligible Then they just said, fine, everyone gets one freebie. Then they had the waiver system for the second transfer, and they got sued, and now they don't have control over that anymore. And I don't see how this isn't heading towards you can transfer 4, 5, 6 times. What's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we're heading. I think I remember when they made the rule a couple of years ago, the one-time transfer exception. I remember talking specifically to Todd Berry at the AFCA, and his immediate reaction was, this will be an unlimited transfer. It will eventually be an unlimited transfer. You kind of open the can, it will happen. And you've even seen some federal bills in Congress around college athletics, in NIL and all that stuff, mention transfers and mention unlimited transfers as well. So we're definitely moving in that direction. And the courts made their decision. Last week, first off, the court made a temporary restraining order for this case, this case over the transfer policy. It was kind of two separate cases kind of conglomerated into one. The hearing I was listening to was like two cases into one, but both were attacking the NCAA transfer policy. And one of the cases were brought by seven attorney generals of seven states. So pretty significant stuff. And the judge in West Virginia, as is the case normally, ruled against the NCAA and said that the transfer policy was a violation of antitrust. And again, it wasn't a final ruling, but he granted a temporary restraining order like for the next 2 weeks until another case, a hearing could happen. All multi-time transfers, second time, third time transfers, fourth time transfers, however many, are immediately eligible at their new schools without a waiver, basically over the 2 week stretch. Well, that's a problem, right? Because it's real complicated for just in that 2 week stretch, these athletes to be eligible in pending another decision. Right. So you could see a case where a basketball player could play over the 2 week stretch during this temporary restraining order. And then the preliminary injunction hearing happens. It was supposed to be December 27th. It's been moved back now, as I'll get to in a minute. But you can imagine a new ruling happening and all those athletes that had played would have been ruled ineligible for the remainder of the season and would have burned a year of competition. So instead of having that issue, kudos actually right to the NCAA for agreeing to make that temporary restraining order through the entire winter and spring season. So through, May, June, the end of the athletic 23-24 athletic season. So any athlete who is a multi-time transfer can play immediately at their new school through the end of this athletic season. That ends usually with the college baseball World Series, right? In late June or so. So they can do it without a waiver. Now, the next step of this is the NCAA changing its own transfer policy, which we'll probably see talked about quite a bit at the NCAA convention in Phoenix next month. It will be a discussion around changing, alternating, adjusting that transfer policy. Do they completely lift it and have unlimited transfers? I think a lot of people are against that, but that's the way the courts are moving, right? So maybe they might have to do it that way.
Yeah, once again, this is like the courts are basically telling the NCAA what to do. And it's a reminder, a refresher. The reason why the NCAA went to the one-time freebie transfer rule is because it already existed for every sport except football, basketball, women's basketball, and like hockey or something.
Yeah,
like for all but four sports.
Yeah,
yeah.
Baseball, maybe
anything they could make a buck on. Yeah,
yeah. So they created uniformity, which made sense. But then, yes, we're just going to give waivers out like Halloween candy, and Uncle Dialysis came into play everywhere, and it all just spiraled out of control. And so now, can you Can you try to get the horse back in the barn? That seems very difficult at this point. And so if we are just going to have, go ahead.
Go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
No, no. And so, if we're heading towards unlimited transfers, if you think we've heard a lot of bitching up to now, but if it's just like literally you can go where you want and can you transfer between semesters and play one semester here and another semester there, like in the winter sports that cross over two semesters? Good Lord. And yes, the academics. Here's the bottom line with all this. If none of this is helping academics, realignment isn't helping academics. And if it just doesn't matter anymore, then get football out of the universities. License the names, license the logos and all that stuff, and just make it Crimson Tide Incorporated, and let them play in Bryant-Denny and rent the facilities and stuff. But seriously, we are so far afield here from anything that's remotely academically related. Like, what are we doing?
Right, right. And that's becoming more and more a topic that you hear administrators and officials kind of discussing. I really think the vast majority of them don't want to see that happen, but is the tether between higher education and major college sports, specifically major college football, right, is stretching, and it does feel like it's withering away and about to just pop. Because you're doing things that impact significantly the kind of academic aspect of all of this. Jerry Moorhead, the Georgia president and chair of the Division I board of directors, he spoke to me last week after the court's ruling about this exact thing, about how this is going to impact academics. And that's the main issue that administrators have. In his idea, like many leaders are starting to speak out on it, is to make the one-time transfer exception more strict by eliminating all waivers. And I think we discussed that a little bit last week on the pod. But and they probably should have done that 2 years ago, right? When they decided to go to the one-time transfer, the kind of compromise should have been, okay, one-time transfer, you get one time and that's it. There are no waivers, there are no waiver process. Right. And now it might be a little too late to try to do that.
Oh, it's too late. They're going to go to four. It's going to be unlimited. They need right now to figure out how to make sure you can't do the mid-season transfer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. If you play travel sports in this country, you generally sign up for a team for 1 year and you literally sign a contract, and it prohibits you from like just switching from this baseball team to that one or the soccer team to that one or whatever it is. You're at this program, but it's a 1 year deal. And I think that's where this is heading. Once they did the waiver, they lost the legal argument because they opened the door. And so you can't sit there and say, this is, we can't have this because you already have it. So they needed to pick a hard line, and maybe they could have fought that in court or they could just, but once it's open, it's it's restraint of trade. I'm going to get paid $1 million if I go over here to play football and you're saying I can't play this year and now I don't get $1 million. It's not hard to see how you're losing that. You can be the most hardcore, I always said, don't do this. That was not good. I don't mind it. It's not going to change my enjoyment of the game, but what they were trying to do, that was a bad idea. They had their heart in the right place, but nobody thought it through. And that was not the one to go light on. So these kids are going to be able to transfer every year. And the academics, I mean, yeah, you're right. They've done nothing for academics.
No.
They expand their leagues. They everything they do. I mean, it's too late. Too late to be crying about that one. So what needs to happen and where this is headed is you're going to transfer. Kyle McCord, you got to play for Syracuse next year. Now, at the end of December, you want to transfer again? Go ahead. Do not start some waiver crap where you're allowed to come in January, and then if you don't like it in spring practice, you get, you can do it again in May. No waivers. Like, you got, they got to, it's like you, you know, it's like a war. You've got to retreat and refortify a new line. So they're not going to do it. It's going to be crazy. But at the same time, it's like this we're talking about, man. If you're an Ole Miss fan right now, you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
We can make the playoff and win some games. Like, we got Walter Noller, you know. Mm-hmm. Our D-line all of a sudden is pretty good. So that's just the way it is. The old thinking is gone. There's going to be incredible belly aching and whining, but I would say very quickly it will be as transfer as many times as you want, and they led the courts right down this line.
The court hearing last week, Dan, you mentioned like restraint of trade and that was a big topic by these, because there were three athletes who were witnesses in this court hearing who actually testified in this court hearing, which I think a lot of people did not necessarily expect. It was really kind of fascinating to hear. And let me go through, because I don't think we did this. We weren't able to do this last week, but let me go through a few things that they told the court. And you can imagine why the judge ruled in the way he did. There was Miami, Ohio quarterback in Colorado transfer, Maddox Kopp, who had his waiver denied despite, because he was going from, he went from Houston, I think, to Colorado, and then was trying to get eligible at a third school, Miami, Ohio. And he left Colorado when Deion Sanders took over. And of course, told the team, and Maddox Kopp was on the front, told the judge, he was on the front row when Deion Sanders had that first right team meeting and said, you know, head to the portal because I'm bringing luggage and it's Louis. Well, in a separate meeting with the quarterbacks, just the quarterbacks, Deion Sanders told the quarterbacks that their job was to make his son, Shador Sanders, a better player, or as best as he can. That was their job. That's what Deion Sanders told the group of quarterbacks. So there was Maddox Kopp saying that, but it goes way further than that. Then we turn to NIL, where I don't, without these next two witnesses, I wonder if the judge goes the direction that he does. I think the judge probably already had his mind made up, but certainly these next two witnesses, these athletes, they targeted NIL, right? They used NIL in the loss of NIL, the NCAA denying their waiver as lost revenue for them. So there's Raekwon Battle, the West Virginia basketball player who got his waiver denied. He compared his NIL contract at West Virginia to an employment contract and said the NCAA was preventing him from accessing his full NIL payment. He said, quote, I'm not going to get what I originally signed up for, basically, in NIL. And then there was another player who used NIL again, a Cincinnati basketball player, Jameel Reynolds, who had his transfer denied and told the court that he believed that the NCAA denial of his waiver impacted his NIL situation. He said, quote, it's harder to make more money, end quote, when you're not playing, you know, when your waiver is denied. So it's it kind of all came out there. It was a little overshadowed last week, but this was a court hearing where a judge granted a temporary restraining order, lifted the transfer policy, probably mostly because players are contending that they are losing money.
How about this? We said it a couple weeks ago, but when does it have, why is it a 4-year cap of eligibility? How many years can I keep getting grad degrees?
Oh, yeah.
Sam Hartman make $1 million next year playing college football, getting a degree. Or he can go to the NFL draft and hope he chooses to stay in college. Why can they stop it? That to me, again, would be like these would be massive changes. To when all of a sudden we have 29, 30-year-old guys being the quarterback of your school and he's on his, you know, 8th degree. But there's good money. That's the stuff they got to be worried about. That's where it's heading. That argument's got a chance, man. They also could just recognize these people as employees and make a deal.
Right.
Well, that might, the courts might soon that, yeah, rule
this
rule
is
that
what
way.
You're going to get.
Yeah. You know? By the way, speaking of that, NLRB, the NLRB hearing cranks back up today. National Labor Relations Board will have another, I think, another hearing today. This is a long way from over. Even if they're ruled employees, there'll be appeals and such. But this is the case where there's a complaint to the National Labor Relations Board that USC, the Pac-12, in the NCAA are employers of college athletes. So that's going on as well this week.
All right. We had a well, actually, just finish up a couple of these portals. KJ Jefferson is out at Arkansas, probably heading to South Carolina. Pretty good. Washington got Will Rogers from Mississippi State as their QB. Baylor got Toledo's Daquan Finn, who was pretty productive in the MAC. So we had all of that. There was a Chip Kelly story. Chip Kelly, after the LA Bowl, after they beat Boise, talked about how sad he was the Pac-12 is departing. Although Washington State and Oregon State now control the Pac-2. They won their ruling.
Go Beavers, go Cougars.
From the Washington Supreme Court. So that's significant. We've talked about that a lot. Kelly said we should just all be independent in football. There should be no conferences for football. He noted what everybody notes. It's totally ludicrous to have a football team playing in the Big Ten. It's way more ludicrous to have your softball team playing in the Big Ten. And all your other sports. Football should be separated. Everyone should be independent. You can have a 64-team conference. It's the Power Five. You can have a 64-team conference. It's the Group of Five. We separate it. They still play each other. Two different television contracts. Everybody shares an equal amount of the revenue to basically have one major conference and one lesser conference. And you pool your resources. You schedule a better system that's more geographically friendly, but with some crossovers. It goes on. He'd sell out the Group of Five, can be called Amazon. The Power Five can be Nike, whatever. He's got all sorts of ideas. He's got ideas.
Dan, sounds like a market colluding, maybe. I think this idea from Chip Kelly is great. I would love to see it happen. It would probably fix a lot of things. It's also probably in violation of federal law.
Probably. Right? Like, I don't think
Congress would have to help in some way, which, you know, we've talked about on the pod a lot, probably too much, but the wheels are in motion. And I think there is something over the next couple months going to come from Congress. I feel more optimistic than ever. I don't know exactly what it will be, but the wheels are in motion. They're going to have to do something because every solution, I think, most of every solution, except for full out employment, most of every solution is going to come with some kind of need some kind of help from Congress.
Yeah. The Chip Kelly is a smart guy who's got a lot of smart ideas. And this is a smart idea, except there was one little clause in there what that Dan read, which is why it would not happen. Everybody shares equally in the revenue.
Yeah, right.
That would require people from the Big Ten and the SEC to share equally with people from the Big 12 and the ACC, and they ain't going to do that.
Which we're going the opposite direction right now within conferences. So there's no way it's turning back.
They don't want to share the same amount in the ACC.
No. Right.
With
don't.
The ACC.
Right. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
No. It would require sacrifice and teamwork, and those are two things that are completely foreign to college football right now.
College football is not big on academics, sacrifice, teamwork, or patience, except when talking to the players.
Right.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea if you can wave a magic wand, but ain't no chance.
No.
There's no chance. UCLA was so broke because they misspent all their resources. How the hell is UCLA broke? Come on, man.
Great question.
That they had to destroy the league.
Yeah.
And pimp out all their players to try to make up their deficit. And now they're going to go do, I mean, I don't disagree, but there's no way you're getting anyone to sacrifice. No one will give up anything.
No. That's
why they want everyone to compromise but them.
Yeah.
And that's where they're at. So I don't know. I'm glad he's having it's a more intelligent conversation than just shouting that everything sucks.
Wild West.
Yes.
Yeah. Wild West. Yes. Yeah.
It's the Wild West. Yeah. Well, deal with it. Get a better gun.
Trade in your pistol for something
better. Yes. Yeah. When in Dodge City, pack shoot. Good heat. So wait. The heaviest heat.
Shoot first, ask questions later.
That's right.
Speaking of the Wild West, the New Mexico Bowl sure was. It wasn't because Fresno beat New Mexico State 37-10. It was a salty Jerry Kill after. Candidate for College Football Inquirer Coach of the Year. So much material out of Jerry Kill in his program. Coach Kill was not pleased after. It was not because they lost, supposedly. It was that he felt, he believed that New Mexico, game was in Albuquerque, where New Mexico is. New Mexico State is in Las Cruces, down the southern part of the state. Mexico State was in Albuquerque for the game, as Fresno. And he claimed that New Mexico and AD Eddie Nunez would not allow New Mexico State to use the indoor practice facility at the University of Albuquerque. Or, I'm sorry, at the University of Mexico in Albuquerque. So he couldn't use the Lobos practice facility as retribution, because the last time there, I don't know, last time they were there, but the footage, there was a picture of New Mexico State quarterback Diego Pavia urinating on the Lobos logo in that facility this year. So earlier this year, a photo emerges. We, of course, covered this like it was, you know, like a Washington Press Corps would do an impeachment, right?
Yeah.
We were all over it. Diego Pavia urinated, allegedly, on the Lobos logo, his arch rival's indoor practice logo. That would be uncouth, I would say.
I would say
it's uncouth, but much celebrated by Aggie Nation down there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, needless to say, Jerry Kill says, well, we weren't allowed to use the practice facility, and he thinks it was because New Mexico, kind of for good reason, would say, hey, we're letting that guy back into our facility.
Yeah, I mean, who blames him, honestly? Let's be real.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
I mean.
But, so he said he had to go to the bowl, and they overrode the school. Now, New Mexico and Eddie Nunez deny all of this and say that they could have. It's a back and forth. If you want to really get into the story, that's absolutely as stupid as stupid and as wonderful at the same time as you would suspect.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know who the hell's right. Don't really care. I just love that the urination story is back in play. So he said, Kill said they did get to go, but they had four cops to keep an eye on the team.
Yeah.
And he said the cops were saying there's a lot of other crime in Albuquerque. Probably better use of their resources, busting criminals out there.
Yeah, shouldn't you have bigger things to do? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Do you? Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I mean, Breaking Bad's over. Maybe they're done with that. It's probably no crime in Albuquerque worse than peeing on the Lobo logo.
Yeah.
I don't know if four cops were needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway,
two would have probably been good.
One to keep your eye on Diego Pavia's pants, make sure they're up. And then
one
the
on everybody else.
Just, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Well, they did four. So they were no logos were peed on, as far as we know. But Jerry Kill with an epic rant, he said that Diego had to get punished for the pee incident. I hope the AD here gets the same damn discipline and the people around this state that Diego got, because he deserves it. It don't bother me a damn bit when he don't let us practice in the indoor facility, when he don't want us to do this and do that. That is chicken. Yeah. Bleep. Said it. Swearing. Jerry Kill. Come on, man. I don't care. That's my opinion. If I get in trouble, when they swear, they always say that. I don't give another swear either, because I can go down to Mexico tomorrow, drink margaritas, and let you all enjoy your life, because I'll be enjoying mine. Well, hell yeah. Who wouldn't be enjoying their life down in Mexico drinking margaritas? But I've got class. I've had class my whole life. And then that's where you lose me, Coach Kill. You know I'm always on your side. And now you got to go with the class bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a photo of your quarterback taking a leak on the logo. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think class can be defined, but that ain't it.
No. Yeah. No. Also, I kind of wish Eddie Nunez would have just came out and just said, your quarterback pissed on our field. We're not letting you back in the facility. I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways.
Like, look, yeah, you cannot do that and then turn around and complain when they don't want you in there. I'm sorry, Jerry Kill. I am sorry. Your quarterback did it, and he apparently did, and you said he disciplined him, although we didn't ever hear that at the time about the discipline, and only coming out now. But, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Pissers can't be choosers. You don't get free reign at the other school's place, especially the other part of the dynamic here is, of course, what happened with the basketball teams last year.
Well, that was tragic.
That was awful. No, it was terribly tragic. Yeah. But, like, New Mexico State and New Mexico have had some stuff. And it's just like, I mean, if you're New Mexico and New Mexico State comes to town, you're probably like, oh, boy, I don't know. You know? I mean, you had a player break curfew at 3 a.m. with a gun and end up in a fight and end up in, it was ruled self-defense, but he shot and killed a New Mexico student. They were shooting at each other. So that's the backstory of New Mexico, New Mexico State. And then the quarterback takes a leak on the logo, not equating the two, but I'm just saying these are addition. It's the next step of something that's happened between them. And if I'm Eddie Nunez, I'm like, I think you guys can find somewhere else to practice.
Seems fair. I think I'm on New Mexico's side on this one. Sorry. But anyway, all right, one last one. Quick People's Court, Crime and Punishment here. It's all the way down in Australia. New York Post was on it, though. A search is underway for an optimistic thief who tore away from a service station in a Krispy Kreme van. The Krispy Kreme delivery van. They stole it.
Oh, boy.
The alleged burglar.
Like with a light on? Oh, no, that's the store
hot donuts
the
now.
Light.
Hot donuts now?
Light. Hot donuts now.
The van had 10,000 donuts in it.
Oh, my God.
So it must be bigger than a van. It's a truck, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on its way to Newcastle, Australia to make deliveries, including Christmas-themed and classic donuts. I like that matters.
Good detail.
It does. They're ruining about the details, Christmas. Dan. Ruining Christmas.
Police are currently searching for the van and the sweet tooth thief, Krispy Kreme said in a statement. Believes she jumped into the van while the driver was inside the service. It was a woman. Appearance in her 30s with long black or brown hair. Okay, that'll do it.
Good. That narrows it down.
The van was regrettably not sprinkled with tracking devices. So if you've got any sweet leads or crispy CCT footage, donut, keep it to yourself, the police said. Contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-333-000. So if you know anything about it. What should we do if they catch this woman? Should you punishment or do you say I can't? I mean, those things are just.
She has
people
to
always
eat
say Krispy Kreme's like
10,000.
Yeah,
Dan. Right. She has to eat all 10,000.
Like, I mean, them all.
Yes, that's the punishment.
Wow. And then she's in a diabetic coma. Yeah. Gotta rescue her.
How long do you think it would take to eat 10,000 donuts? Like,
holy moly, I don't know. But
a month, at least, right?
At least a month, yeah.
I mean, the thing that jumped out to me, they have Krispy Kreme in Australia.
I guess so.
Wow. I mean, Krispy Kreme is getting around. Impressive. And then, 10,000 in one place. My goodness. I like Ross's punishment. I like it.
All right. I think that's fair. Eat all the... Oh, my God.
Yeah, you just... I mean, reminds me of another Seinfeld. I like to drop the Seinfeld... nuggets in our pod, the top of the muffin to you episode where Newman takes a glass of milk or multiple glasses of milk and he has to eat all of the bottoms of the muffins.
Right,
that's what she has to do. She's just got to get milk, and she can do it.
Oh wait, I got an update.
Oh,
she got busted. She was on the run for 2 weeks.
Well, secondly. How do you not get busted driving around a Krispy Kreme truck?
Yeah.
Like, it's a fairly obvious.
It's, plus, like day.
It's one of those trucks you'd get excited to see. You'd be like, oh, look at Krispy Kreme. Right.
It's like Dumb and Dumber with Harry the dog truck. You know, like, you know, I mean, you know where it is.
Let's see. Wait a minute. Here's the update. Traceable. The Australian woman who stole a truck full of 10,000 Krispy Kreme donuts was arrested and charged Thursday after 2 weeks on the run. Surveillance captured in the description. Detectives followed leads in the vehicles for about a week, led into a suburban car park where the delivery truck had been abandoned. Then they were able to basically figure it out. As for the donuts, they are spoiled and destroyed. So she did not eat all the donuts.
Wow.
So what was the point of this exhibition
Christmas
here?
Is ruined.
Maybe she just
Australia.
Wanted like two donuts, like, you know.
She took 10,000.
Just went over the top.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It's the crime if you go too far. She's like the Connor Stallions of donut thieves.
Right.
Like,
oh, there
you go. Exactly. I want to help with our scouting. I think I'll do this. Like, no.
Don't
no,
bring
no,
Connor
no.
into this, Dan.
He's got to come into every episode.
There we go. Eight Michigan law school graduates just started firing off emails to us.
Why you got
to
bring that up?
Thanks. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we're glad that the law enforcement system of Australia cracked this very important case of the missing 10,000 Krispy Kreme donuts. So there we are. All right, we'll be back. Pat's heading. He's not going to be here later this week. Ross and I will, though, for National Signing Day on Wednesday. Probably come a little later in the day than we normally do for all the excitement. See if there's some late flips. All the rankings. We'll get the hats. All of it. It's going to be exciting. It'll be better in February, though. We will talk to you later.
Merry Christmas, everyone.